Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Loftin.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
I like the job, Oliver. Fires left side. Get a man there. Stevie catch. Touchdown!
To being able to go out there and move, you know what I'm saying, get the herky jerk back.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Inside the 10. 5-yard line. C.J. Spiller!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO. Tonight with guest host Sal Capaccio, features defense attorney Mike D'Amico on the Aaron Hernandez case, former Buffalo Bill Chris Draft, and a Bills fan with a heart-wrenching story and a familiar name. That and your phone calls tonight on The John Murphy Show.
This place is pandemonium!
Touchdown, Buffalo! Leotis McKelvin brings it all the way back!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
It's The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. My name is Sal Capaccio, filling in for Murph once again tonight. Great to be along with you on a Wednesday night along Buffalo Bills Radio. We got a jam-packed show for you tonight. Big news in the NFL, of course, everybody talking about it. The Aaron Hernandez case and situation, and we're going to cover that, especially in the first segment here tonight, as we are going to have on local defense attorney from Buffalo, New York, Mike D'Amico, who is going to help us break down what we saw in the courtroom today and where we go from here and what we can expect to see. So we're going to hear from Mike in just a few minutes. We'll talk about that, and then we're going to have even more for you a little bit later as we discuss how this relates to the New England Patriots a little bit and going forward with the legal process. Also, tonight on the program, 8 o'clock, an hour from now, going to talk with Chris Draft. He is a former linebacker of the Buffalo Bills. He was at the Rookie Symposium. He talked with the rookies about some of the pitfalls you have to be aware of if you're a rookie coming in the league. Remember that great speech we've all seen Herm Edwards give a couple of years ago at the Rookie Symposium? Well, they have former players and coaches and guys like that. Go and talk to the rookies. And Chris Draft is one of the guys that did that this year. He spoke at the Rookie Symposium. He'll join us at 8 o'clock tonight. And he's also going to Afghanistan, by the way, soon to talk with the troops. So we'll ask him a little bit about that. 8:30 tonight, got a very special interview, special story to share with you. It's a heart-wrenching story, but at the same time, it's a story about strength and courage and a guy that's showing that. And he's a Bills fan. His name is Brian Piccolo. And I know a lot of you know that name, and you should know that name because of the movie Brian Song. Of course, Brian Piccolo from the movie Brian Song, the subject of the movie Brian Song, was a former Chicago Bears running back who passed away of cancer. And the movie, of course, with James Caan and Billy Dee Williams really portrayed that so well and everything that he went through there and his fight and his struggle. And Brian Piccolo, his cousin, is from Western New York, and he grew up here. He's a Bills fan, and he is now an MMA fighter. But he's also, unfortunately, battling cancer himself. And doctors have not given him a very good prognosis. And he has a family, he has a couple of young kids. And he has a couple of things he's trying to take care of before things go even worse for him down the road. And he wants to make sure all of those things are set. So we're going to talk with him about that. And he's going to join us on the line at 8:30 tonight. And Brian Piccolo has an interesting story to share. And a couple of things are going on in Buffalo and a benefit that's actually going to be happening for him in September that we'll talk about as well. But just try to talk to Brian about his life and up to this point, how everything's been going, about his MMA career, and then going forward with the cancer that he is battling and what he's trying to do for his family. So a lot on the docket tonight. But of course, we start with the news of the day, and that is Aaron Hernandez. All over the place. Aaron Hernandez, not only getting arrested today, getting released by the New England Patriots, that happened earlier in the day. The first thing that happened, getting arrested, then he got released, and then right after that, charged with murder. Not only murder, but 5 gun charges on top of the murder charge. So Aaron Hernandez, looking at a really serious situation, obviously. We saw it play out in the courtroom today. The cameras were in there. It was carried live both by ESPN and NFL Network. And if you got a chance to see that, you heard the prosecution give very, very detailed evidence of what they have against Aaron Hernandez. Then you heard his defense attorney step forward and talk about why he should be granted bail. He ultimately was not granted bail. Said the evidence is circumstantial. We're going to bring on Mike D'Amico in a little while. He will talk about this. He's a local defense attorney. But let's hear from some of the major players in this situation right now. First, the Aaron Hernandez charges being read in Attleboro District Court today.
Count 1 and count 2, date of offense, 2017, 2013. Count 1 is murder. Count two, carry without a license. Carry a firearm without a license. Count three, possession of a large capacity firearm. Count four, possession of a large capacity firearm. Count five, possession of a firearm without an FID card. Count six, possession of a firearm without an FID card. And so Mr. Hernandez says there are some charges. Are you ready to proceed? Is there a request for bail in this case?
We do request bail, Your Honor.
Okay.
After the hearing, Aaron Hernandez's attorney, Michael Fee, was outside the courtroom talking with the media. Here's what he had to say.
You just heard we had a discussion in court about restricting comment on the case. And out of respect to that process, the defense team cannot comment today on this case. We're going to be pursuing it in court.
How are you doing?
We look forward to our day in court.
How's Aaron doing?
Aaron's fine. Thank you very much.
Michael, you said— I expect more of the same. We will not hear much coming from the Aaron Hernandez side and probably not even the prosecution side. A lot of times some of these things will play out in the media. So far, it's been pretty tight-lipped. In fact, today's charges were very much a surprise, but we'll see some hear some things leak out, but we'll probably not get much out of the Aaron Hernandez side. NFL Network's Alex Matcham observing Odin Lloyd's family in the courtroom. Of course, Odin Lloyd is the young man who was murdered.
Odin Lloyd's family were about three rows behind the prosecution during the arraignment hearing. We counted about six members of the family there. They were visibly emotional throughout the whole proceedings. However, at one point, while the district attorney was discussing the events of the night, how Odin Lloyd was murdered, and the events just after that when Hernandez returned to his home, a woman, we believe her to be the mother of Odin Lloyd, got visibly upset and was escorted out of the courtroom in order to regain her composure. So she was escorted out. The remaining family members sat and watched the proceedings as they went on.
All this sound courtesy of NFL.com. We thank them very much. And here again is Alex Matcham of NFL Network observing Aaron Hernandez in the courtroom.
From what I saw of Aaron Hernandez, he was stoic. He stood the entire time of the proceedings, and the proceedings weren't short. They were close to about 30 minutes for the district attorney to go through the events of the weekend and eventually the night in question. He stood the entire time, stood still, didn't sway, no emotion on the face. I did not see him look over at the Lloyd family. I didn't see him look at his girlfriend, who was also in the courtroom. He looked ahead most of the time, or at the judge, or at the district attorney, and absolutely no emotion on his face during the entire proceeding.
One of the reporters you've heard here on the John Murphy Show covering the New England Patriots in Boston is Mike Reese of ESPN Boston. He was on the Scott Van Pelt Show earlier.
Well, it is stunning, and I think the way I react is I go back to 10 months ago when the New England Patriots, 2 years before they even had to, gave Aaron Hernandez a large contract extension. It's an organization that doesn't make too many mistakes, and when they did that, I sort of felt like they endorsed not just the player but the person, and to be in this situation 10 months later is a shocker.
Once Hernandez was arrested, the Patriots released him almost immediately. What did they know about the specific charges that led into their quick reaction?
Yeah, it makes you wonder if they knew the charges, and I don't know that for certain, but I do think that just the fact that he was arrested at that time was sort of their trigger to say, you know what, we don't even care. We're not even going to wait to find out. Just the fact that we're associated with this, we want to sort of distance ourselves from that. So I thought that was a strong statement. You can look at it and say, you know, oh, what about the salary cap charge and this and that? And that's, you know, their statement was that's minor compared to the larger issue at play here.
Once again, thank you very much to NFL.com, also ESPN Radio, Scott Van Pelt, along with, you heard Ryan Russillo in there, talking with Mike Reese of ESPN Boston. We're going to bring in our legal analyst right here on the John Murphy Show tonight, defense attorney from Buffalo, New York, Mike D'Amico. Mike, thanks a lot for joining me on the line to break this down. I really appreciate it, as always, buddy.
Not a problem, Sal. Thank you.
All right. Were you really surprised at the heavy nature of the charges, considering we hadn't heard a peep up to this point, other than possibly an obstruction of justice charge?
Well, given the situation today and the actions that occurred today, an arrest early in the morning of Aaron Hernandez at his home, he wasn't allowed to surrender, which he had attorneys that were involved in the case, which typically when that happens, the prosecution would allow you to surrender your client. But when they went to his house early in the morning, pulled him out with a T-shirt over his hands cuffed behind his back. They didn't even let the man put a T-shirt on. And then when he appears in court, you see the victim's family there. You kind of saw what was coming, and at that point, you knew it was going to be a serious charge. But is it surprising? Yeah, given the investigation being quick Obviously, they think they have enough evidence to convict Mr. Hernandez of this crime that they've charged him with.
That was an interesting scene, the handcuffs, the shirt, the arms under the shirt. Why was it like that? I mean, why not just have his arms out normally? I mean, I know it sounds like kind of maybe a weird question to some people, but I was surprised that he actually had his arms under there. Was that by choice?
My opinion is they did it intentionally to make a splash in the media. They didn't want to let the man surrender himself, which is not uncommon in situations like this, especially when he's been cooperative with the law enforcement for the last 8 or 9 days, as I understand it. That, I believe, Sal, was directly intended for the media, which has been covering. They've probably been sitting outside the man's house all day. They're trying to portray him in a light that would not be favorable to him, and I'm sure that's what their intention was.
Were you surprised there was no bail granted in this case?
Not really. Oftentimes in a serious charge, and this is murder in the first degree, Hernandez is facing, as I understand it, in Massachusetts, life without parole. If he's convicted of that crime, he does have significant resources given his contract that he recently signed. So I'm not surprised, and as is often the case in a serious case like this, like a murder, they will not set bail. So that's not real surprising, in my opinion.
Local defense attorney Mike D'Amico joining me on the line right now, talking about the Aaron Hernandez case. Hernandez charged with first-degree murder, also carrying a firearm without a license, 2 counts of carrying a large-capacity firearm, possession of a firearm without an FID card, and possession of ammunition without an FID card. FID, I'm not sure, maybe you can help me on that. Is that must be a firearm type of anagram, right?
I'm sure it is. I'm not that astute on the Massachusetts law, but I'm sure it has something to do with that. The charges, though, pale in comparison to the murder first, as far as that goes.
Of course. Now, let me ask you, first-degree murder. We didn't hear exactly. I don't believe they actually said they believe he was the shooter. There was some talk about that. I read some about it on Twitter. But does first-degree murder mean necessarily that he pulled the trigger, or could he have been there, someone else did, and can you still be charged with first-degree murder in that scenario?
Question, given the facts in the case. In New York, which obviously the case isn't in, you cannot, it's one of the defenses to murder in the first degree that you are not the actual person that pulled the trigger. My review of the Massachusetts law, that doesn't exist, but he's not charged with aiding and abetting, and that's where I think the significance lies. And further, he's the only person charged as far as we know. We know that there were two other individuals that have been mentioned in the media reports that were with Hernandez when he returned home that evening, and the fact that they weren't standing next to him today would indicate to me that they believe he was the shooter. However, the language the prosecutor used is interesting, because I believe his words were, "We believe he orchestrated this homicide," which doesn't, he didn't go so far as to say we believe he pulled the trigger, which I think gives the defense a little bit of wiggle room here, which is interesting.
I also agree that that's interesting. So what is that? Do you, in your opinion, from things that you've seen and being in the courtroom and how these investigations play out, do you think that the other two guys basically turned evidence and, you know, rolled up on Aaron Hernandez here, and that's why they got to this point with Hernandez?
The first thing you look at when you have a charge like that is who else is charged. And if no one else is charged, that's what happened. I would suspect, given the fact that they weren't standing next to him in court, that they did roll. But that's not a certainty. There's the possibility that because of Hernandez's role as an NFL player, that they perhaps wanted to get him off the streets quicker because they were concerned about flight. And I don't know that's the case, but I suppose that could be a possibility. But it is interesting that they did, at least today, we don't know, we haven't heard that the other two were charged. So I would suspect that they cooperated with the prosecution in the investigation of the case.
Okay, when I'm watching this thing on TV, Mike, I hear this prosecutor, he just keeps going on, Is this normal how long he went? Because, I mean, I usually don't watch murder cases on TV necessarily. I don't know. Is this normal what he did, how long he went? And also, is it normal to give that much detail? I mean, it seemed to me, as someone who isn't, you know, well, as well-versed as you in the legal system, obviously, it seemed to me like he gave a tremendous amount of detail, and they really took their time to put this together.
Great point, Sal. This was an arraignment. An arraignment is your first appearance before the judge, and the argument that was requested was a bail argument. And one of the issues typically in bail is the strength of the case. But you're right. The prosecutor went into specifics about the investigation that normally I wouldn't expect to hear. My there's a gag order issued, and they probably knew that was coming. And I suspect that prosecutor is trying to poison the jury pool to make, you know, let out the case before the judge told him you can't say anything more. And knowing that it was going to be on television, I think that was an absolute strategy of the prosecution. And I've personally never seen anything like that before, but I suspect that's what happened.
Will his attorney try to move this case somewhere, or do you think it's better for him to have this tried where it is?
Well, given those comments and the length of that statement, and I'm sure that's what the judge was thinking when he issued the gag order, because that's going to definitely be a concern of the defense, I would imagine. The prosecutor went on the air or on television and ESPN, CNN, they all covered it, and I'm sure the local coverage was even better than that, and went on and on about his proof. And that's only one side of the story, Sal. And just because the prosecution said it doesn't mean it's true. There's always another side. So perhaps that will be part of the defense now.
All right. Speaking of part of the defense, you are a defense attorney. You've defended people all the way from, you know, I guess, minimal or minor type crimes to people who've been charged with murder. What would be the defense strategy going in? What options does the defense have to try and defend Aaron Hernandez here? What do you expect?
Well, a lot of it depends on the proof that they have. If the witnesses are cooperating against him, your defense is much different than it is if they are not. If they are not, then the burden is on the prosecution to prove that Aaron Hernandez was involved in this homicide, and they cannot prove that typically without more than just another individual co-defendant, if you will's testimony. If they are cooperating, then your defense becomes much different. People cooperate for reasons, to save their own hide, obviously. So your defense would become, well, of course you're going to point the finger at him because you don't want to spend the rest of your life in jail. So depending on what is happening with those other two, that's a key component to this case, Sal, that until you know those facts, you won't know exactly what the defense would be. But it's certainly, they're both available at this point as far as I can tell.
Okay, everything's kind of settled down today. What's the next step in this? What should we look for next and when?
Well, my understanding is he has not been indicted by a grand jury. These are only charges laid by the prosecution and the police, which in our country, a person is afforded the right to have their case heard by a grand jury. It's not the same level of proof that's required before the grand jury as it is at trial. It's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's more of a reasonable cause to believe or a preponderance of evidence. But it's a lower standard, but accused people are still entitled to that right. So the next step, as I understand it, would be that would happen. If the grand jury were to indict him on these charges, which typically does happen, I don't think they would have made an arrest if they didn't think they could get an indictment. He would then discovery, motion practice, those things of that sort, like the thing you mentioned about perhaps moving the trial venue, and then ultimately a trial is what would come next.
I'm assuming we'll see this on TV because the cameras were in the courtroom today, which tells me that I've obviously in Massachusetts they do allow television, you know, footage of cases, right?
I would imagine that if they're covering that the arraignment, they will be able to cover everything.
Well, we expect this to go on, and of course, a lot of NFL fans' eyes and everybody else's eyes will be glued to the TV throughout this. Mike, always good to get information from you. I appreciate it. Hey, I hope we can catch up down the line, and you can kind of be somebody there for us that we can get with when things like this happen. Especially in this case, we're following it, and we appreciate your insight. So I hope we can do that, buddy.
Not a problem, Sal. Anytime.
All right. Thank you very much. Mike D'Amico, local defense attorney, joining me here on the John Murphy Show. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Aaron Hernandez case, and we're going to talk Buffalo Bills football with you. I have an interesting question I want to ask all of you out there about former Bills that are playing in the NFL, and if you'd want any of them back, and if so, which ones? I'm Sal Capaccio. This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show. I'm Sal Capaccio. Thanks a lot for tuning in. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at John Murphy Show. You can get in touch with me specifically on Twitter. I appreciate you doing that. Appreciate the follow. I am at Sal Sports on Twitter, all one word. You can download the Bills mobile app, buffalobills.com. And while you're there, by the way, just go buffalobills.com/John Murphy Show, and you can hear all of these shows on demand right there at your fingertips. Because if you miss anything, you want to go back and hear it, because we got a whole bunch of stuff going on. And I'm here all week for John Murphy, by the way. I'll be in next week for Murph as well, as we head towards the July 4th holiday weekend. Russ Burton is here down here at One Bills Drive. here at the John Murphy Studios. You got anything planned for July 4th weekend next week? You got anything going on?
Actually, yes, I do, Sal.
What do you do?
Why, thank you for asking. My family has a place in the Adirondacks.
All right.
And actually, I look forward to it because it's time with my family, which is great. Adirondacks, beautiful. But we always do, it's my brother-in-law's family, and they're awesome, and they do these great themed parties. And,
yes.
Like everybody dresses up and
I've
gets
been
all
to
crazy.
Some of those, yep.
It's awesome. It's a lot of fun. What about you?
What is your theme this year? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I believe it's the whole party is Mexican themed.
Okay.
And, like food, drinks.
I have
a bottle of tequila from Mexico with two worms in it that I've been saving for years. I'll probably die from drinking it, but you know, it's all for the fun of the party.
Well, you know, my wife and I will hang out with some friends locally, watch some fireworks, stuff like that. Just
cool.
Have a good time. You know, she's I guess newly pregnant. I guess I want to say
That's right.
It's still early on. We're actually this week finding out the gender of the baby. So it's going to be very interesting.
That's awesome.
So I'm sure I'll be doing some shopping during the holiday weekend.
You will be more than busy.
I will be doing that. But it's funny, the theme party you mentioned real quick. You know, I've been to some of those. You know, the Caribbean theme or whatever. But one of the better ones I went to down in Florida when I lived there. Friends of ours had a James Bond themed party. So everybody
That's great.
You had to come at it as a James Bond character or, you know, do something like that. And everybody dressed up and it was really cool. So
that is pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Last year was redneck and I had a mason jar tied around my neck with a string, and that's what I was drinking from all night. It was great.
Well, I'll tell
that's good.
It's the time of year to have some fun. Of course, no fun going on in Boston right now, and New England Patriots fans today found out not only that Aaron Hernandez was released, of course, because he was arrested, but then Aaron Hernandez and the world found out that he was being charged with first-degree murder on top of five other gun charges. Of course, the gun charges are one thing, but the first-degree murder charge that goes along with that, that's really the big one, obviously. And we're going to have a lot more that's going to be happening with this case, and a lot of eyes are going to be on this case going forward. There will be a time where we'll talk about this from a football sense. And I don't think the time is right now necessarily appropriate to do that. But, of course, you think about it as a football fan, how this affects the Patriots. And, of course, if you're a Bills fan, you think maybe even a little more about that because the Patriots come to Buffalo week one, and they play here in Buffalo week one. So you think a little bit about Hernandez and Gronkowski and losing Welker. And, of course, Donald Jones left Buffalo to go to New England, and you think a little bit about that. So we'll delve more into that a little bit as this, you know, goes on and we get closer to the season. I think right now, though, the concentration should be more on what happened today, the arrest, and, of course, the fact that there was a young man who lost his life and was killed in this situation. I think that's really what the focus should be on right now as far as the Aaron Hernandez situation is concerned. I mentioned Donald Jones, by the way. He left Buffalo. He went to New England. So he's a former Bill. Got a question for you tonight. I want to throw it out there right now. You can hit me up at 803-0550 if you're in the 716 area code or 888-550-2550. That's 888-550-2550. Call the John Murphy Show and answer this question for me because I think we're going to get a lot of really interesting variety of answers. I threw it out on Twitter earlier at Sal Sports and got a ton of different responses. How about this? If you could choose one former Bills player who's currently in the league active on another team, I mean, you can't choose Bruce Smith, you can't choose Andre Reed. If you could choose one player who's playing with another team, aside from anybody who just left, okay? You can't choose anybody who just left this year. If you could choose one former player on another team right now to come back to Buffalo to play, who would it be and why? It's a really interesting question because there's more players than you probably think that you may want, but I'm not sure there's that one guy who stands out. That's kind of what I thought about this. First of all, you cannot choose Ryan Fitzpatrick, Andy Levitre, George Wilson, Nick Barnett, the aforementioned Donald Jones, or David Nelson. All of them have not played yet with another team. They're gone. They just left this year. I want guys who had left in the past, who've already played with other teams, they're on other teams' rosters, guys that you would want. A guy, one guy, you got to pick one. Don't say, oh, I'd like him because of this or that guy because of that and him. No, no. One guy. If you could have one player back, and the reason we came up with this topic, going to throw some love over to my producer here, Russ Burton. It was on the heels of the whole Danny Briere hockey thing, maybe coming back to Buffalo with the Sabres, and you actually brought this to my attention. I said, that's a great discussion because more I thought about it was, man, there's a lot of guys.
Yeah, well, the Flyers bought out Briere.
Right.
And apparently up to 15 teams have been interested in him and contacted him. I know for me, you know, the Sabres fan part of me kind of hopes that they're in the mix because it'd be great to see him come back here. They certainly need some veteran leadership.
Right.
But, yeah, it got me thinking, like, if there's a a Buffalo Bill out there. And I think you could probably throw in free agents too, right? I mean, because then you got like your Taquio Spikes.
Anybody who's active, absolutely.
Technically, you could throw T.O. in there.
I agree. T.O. should be a part of it if you want him back, because he is still active. He's not retired. He's not out of the league, but he did not play last year.
I got to tell you, number one on my list, probably Antoine Winfield.
Okay, now that's probably number one on most people's list. I'm going to run through some of the names I got, okay? I will tell you that Antoine Winfield was the number one response to this, but he's not my response. The more I thought about it, I went with another guy but plays the same position. Can you figure that out?
Nate Clements?
No. In fact, funny thing is, I didn't really get many responses about Clements.
Jabari Greer.
Jabari Greer.
Yeah.
I went with Jabari Greer. He's still 31 years old.
Okay.
He is part of a New Orleans team a few years ago that won a Super Bowl, still playing a high level of football, I believe. Yeah, their defense wasn't good last year. You know, they were in a bad situation last year. They lost their head coach. They lost their defensive coordinator, all that kind of stuff. Jabari Greer is my guy, but Antoine is very close. I'm going to throw some names out that I got on Twitter to this question. I want you to call and give me your answer to this. 803-0550 or 888-550-2550. Who's the one Bill, if you could choose one, that's currently active in the NFL, who's a former Bill, I should say, currently active in the NFL, that you would want back in Buffalo for whatever reason? You'd say, I like that guy back here. Maybe there's nobody, but try and find one. Here are the guys that really showed up on my Twitter feed when I threw this question out earlier.
I just thought of another one, too.
Okay, Antoine Winfield, Jabari Greer. Somebody chose Paul Posluszny. I would not. But
if you just look at numbers, statistically, he had a pretty good year.
We got a Marshawn Lynch, a few of them, obviously. Here's my thing. In a vacuum, Marshawn Lynch on the surface compared to everybody else. Oh, yeah. Well, but you have C.J. Spiller. Why would I want Marshawn Lynch? I don't want that. I don't need him on the Bills roster right now. He does nothing for me at this point. I want C.J. to carry the load. And I'm fine with Fred Jackson, by the way, being the second guy there. Willis McGahee is not a guy really anybody chose, but I threw him in there because he was just cut recently by Denver, and he is a guy that has done well since leaving Buffalo, although he's older. Another guy that I know not a lot of you may be too down with this, but I hope you can understand why, is Taquio Spikes. Because he's older, but man, that leadership they could get from Taquio Spikes. Always loved Taquio in Buffalo. I think he would be an interesting choice. But on that note, London Fletcher. London Fletcher, another guy that's still doing it in this league, and he's still playing at a high level. He gets a boatload of tackles every year, although some people say, well, they're inflated because he's a middle linebacker, and those guys are always going to be around the ball and whatever. Brian Moorman got a couple of votes for him on Twitter at Sal Sports for the former Bill that some people would like back. Here's one I disagree with, but I got a few on it, and I'll tell you why I disagree. Jason Peters.
Okay.
Jason Peters, left tackle, of course, left Buffalo. There was a contract dispute. The Bills wound up trading. He went to Philadelphia, had a good year, went to a Pro Bowl, but then last year missed the entire year because of an Achilles injury, and then was recently arrested, by the way, after he was drag racing and the police chased him and all that. Those two things, missing last year. Missing last year and then getting arrested are two big negatives why I don't want him back. Also, I'm fine with Cordy Glenn. Cordy Glenn was supposed to be a guard coming out of college by so many people's estimates who thought they knew better. Well, the Bills said, we're going to play him at left tackle because he's a left tackle. He did darn well at left tackle.
Sure.
And he could be a franchise left tackle.
That was his first year.
I don't need Jason Peters back here.
It's funny. I wasn't even thinking of any of that. There's the injuries, you know, the whole thing with the police. I was just thinking, he didn't do that good in Philadelphia.
Right. He had one good year when he went there, and then,
Even when he made the Pro Bowl here, it was like, okay.
Right.
You know, but, yeah, I'm good without him.
All right, here's a few more. This one hasn't been brought up yet, but I think this is the most controversial one. I'll say the most polarizing one. Dante Whitner. Dante Whitner goes from Buffalo in a circumstances that, of course, there was a lot of weird stuff going on there. Did he want to be here? Did he not want to? He was picked very highly, which was never his fault, by the way. I never thought he played up the potential of that kind of draft pick, but it wasn't his fault. He was picked that highly. Goes to San Francisco, plays very well on that defense, but surrounded by so much talent over there. Goes to the Pro Bowl and the Super Bowl. Dante Whitner, some people definitely tweeted me that he would be the guy they'd want back.
Dante Whitner is another guy who, you know, like him or not, he does get a lot of tackles.
He does. I know, but is he in coverage? He gets beat sometimes deep. I've seen him beat in Buffalo.
I'm just talking strictly about the numbers.
It's interesting. That's the most polarizing one. I got one here that I didn't even think of, and I said, okay, I get it. Richie Incognito. He made the Pro Bowl last year. Did you know that? From Miami,
I think I did.
And the Bills have a hole right now at left guard. I don't know. I mean, maybe, right?
I tell you, you say we have a whole left guard. I don't think we do, just because.
Maybe. They might not by the time the season starts.
Well, no. I mean, I think, Colin Brown has certainly shown pretty well in training camp so far. And, it's looking like he's got a pretty good shot at taking that. And Doug Ligurski.
Sure.
They just brought in, too, who's going to compete for that. A guy I was thinking of with the high-octane offense.
Yeah.
I don't think he's on anybody's roster right now. I think he was in San Diego last. I'm having trouble thinking this. Roscoe Parrish. If he's still kicking around out there, I don't.
He's currently a free agent.
He is currently a free agent.
He is available. If you want him, you can bring him in. Here's the thing. Does he fit
in? I don't really want him.
Does he fit in with TJ and Marquise Goodwin and Liotis returning kicks?
No, I would rather have TJ.
Sure. But that's an interesting choice. I always liked Roscoe.
I was just more excited that I thought of it.
Yeah, there you go.
To be honest.
I think there's more guys out there than people realize who you could come up with. The problem
is... I'm sticking with Antoine.
You can't come up with one necessarily, except maybe, I think Antoine, to me, Jabari is that guy who I say... You know what? I'd really like to have Jabari Greer. He was a guy that I'd welcome back. If the Bills said right now, hey, somehow they got Jabari Greer, I'd be like, that's a pretty good deal. I like having Jabari back. I think that he would be a nice tandem and he would help out. They got some young corners there. They need some veterans back there in the secondary. You mentioned Nate Clements. I'm not too, as one of the guys could possibly be. Mm-hmm. Didn't really get many votes for him on Twitter. But I'll say, I understand why. I don't know if he ever really was. Antoine Winfield was the guy. Not Nate Clements when all this was said and done with those two corners. T.O. was an interesting one you brought up because I forgot. Yeah, he's still out there. He's still a guy that can play, I guess, if you want. He's not retired, but I don't know if he can play, if you get the point. Well, so we'll see where that goes. All right, you guys are lighting up the phones now, so we'll get to those phone calls and we come back with the question, what Buffalo Bill, what former Bill, currently playing in the NFL, would you want back on the team if you could have one of them? There's a lot to choose from. Greer, Winfield, Paz, Marshawn, Willis, Tequio, London, Mormon, Peters, Whitner, Incognito, T.O., Clemens. A lot of them out there, all right? So hang on the line. Ryan, Dave, we'll get to you when we come back. Your phone calls, 803-0550, 888-550-2550. I'm Sal Capaccio, and this is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
All right, welcome back. John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. I'm Sal Capaccio sitting in for Murph tonight. Phone numbers, 803-0550 if you're in the 716 area code. If not, toll free, we'll pay for it, 888-550-2550. At Sal Sports on Twitter, that's where you can find me. At John Murphy Show on Twitter is where you can follow us always at the John Murphy Show. I threw out a question to you a little while ago. What former Buffalo Bill who's currently playing in the National Football League, he's an active player, would you want back on the team if you could have one of them? But you can't count anybody who just left this offseason, so that means you can't say Andy Levitre. I know that'd probably be one up on the top of a lot of people's list, but we're talking about guys who've been away from the team that are on other teams that didn't just leave this year. Let's go out to the phone lines right now. Ryan in Cheektowaga has been waiting patiently. What's going on, Ryan?
You've really hamstrung me here. You get so many restrictions, and you've already named... most of the people that I would have named, I was going to say Whitner.
Well, yeah, I don't have any restrictions. You can say Whitner. My restrictions, the only restriction I have is nobody who left this year.
Okay, well, I was going to say Whitner, and then I had another, as I was waiting, I had another idea, but now I don't know that he's actually still in the league.
Who's that?
I was thinking of Reuben Brown.
No, Reuben Brown.
He's gone, right? He's way gone, isn't he?
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Ryan.
All right, okay.
That's all right, no problem. No, I got you. Look, there's no restrictions. I'm just saying you can't choose anybody who just left this year. That's the only restriction. And I did name a bunch of guys because I'm giving you some ideas out there, by the way. I'm just trying to help you people along. That's all. By the way, Reuben Brown, he's doing well. I think he's in the Hamptons right now, actually. I do a TV show with Reuben Brown, and Reuben does pretty well. In fact, I think he was doing a dancing contest recently. He looks great. He could probably come back and play, actually. Still looks good, Reuben Brown. And he was a Pro Bowler, and he went to Chicago and had a good career, played in the Super Bowl for the Bears, but can't use Reuben Brown, though. He can't play... He can't come back because he's not.
I don't think you can
anymore.
Pull him away from that cushy enforcer's gig.
I don't think so either. David, all the way down in Kentucky, home of where Stevie Johnson went to college. What's going on, David?
That's right. I was going to say Whitner, but other than Whitner, I would say a proven veteran linebacker. I mean, Fletcher or Spikes. They may have another good year left. Maybe show Kiko Nigel Bradham a thing or two.
If you had to
help out a lot.
If you had to choose between the two and to take one back, if they were both they both wanted to come to Buffalo, same price, affordable, Tokyo or London, who would it be?
I'd say London.
Why?
I'd say London. You know, I think maybe, well, I guess it if we're 100 tackle guy, I think he might be more versatile than a Takeo Spike. That would probably be the reason.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. And notice, by the way, that Dave did not choose another linebacker we talked about a little while ago, Paul Posluszny. Paz. He's not on top of many people's lists for some reason. And I think part of that reason is people thought he was inflated and overrated here in Buffalo. And he really, and one of the reasons, I'll tell you though, he put up numbers, but man, he had some trouble covering people out of the backfield, covering tight ends. It was always tough and painful to watch that. I mean, he did pretty well, you know, stuffing the run sometimes. I think, you know, he had some good seasons doing that, and we liked him here in Buffalo, but he got a big contract to go to Jacksonville, and I think it was just too much for Bills fans. And, you know, of course, he played during a period, which, you know, during that time, the Bills were, of course, they haven't made the playoffs in 13 years, but while he was here, it was really some of the leaner years over that time period. And I think that's part of the reason also that he's not on near that top of that list for a lot of people. But there's a lot of guys out there. I still say Jabari Greer is my number one, although I could totally be down with Antoine Winfield. If you got Greer and Winfield, like 1A and 1B for me there. Maybe Winfield's 1A. He just, by the way, went to Seattle. Antoine was a free agent, and he signed with Seattle, and he's still playing. He's playing at a high level. Jabari Greer has a Super Bowl ring, played for the New Orleans Saints, and won a Super Bowl just a few years ago. It was a very key component to that Super Bowl team. I always regretted letting Jabari walk. There's been a lot of guys that we've let walk here in Buffalo that, you know, you could say some, hey, you know, he wasn't worth it. Didn't have, you know, his best years are behind him. And there's been some guys you say, you know what? They let him go, and then he turned into something pretty good somewhere else. You know, Marshawn's maybe one of those players. But the flip side to that is you got C.J. Spiller instead. And personally, between the two of them, I'll take C.J. Spiller. So I don't need Marshawn Lynch back in Buffalo. Dante Whitner's an interesting one. I still say he is the most polarizing of all of these because Dante, I think, gets hurt really a lot in Buffalo by fans due to the fact that he was taken so high, and it really wasn't his fault that he was taken so high, but you want more out of the number 8 overall pick. When you take a safety there, it's very hard to get, you know, that career that you want of the top of a top 8 guy. So I think a lot of fans kind of get hamstrung thinking about that because they hold that against him. Although Dante, you know, he was here. I'm not a guy who ever thought that Dante, you know, the Bills should have broke the bank for him. I definitely don't believe that. And he went to San Francisco, and I know he's done some good things there. I know he made the Pro Bowl, and I know he was a very, very big part of them going to the Super Bowl last year. But I'm not sure he would have done that in Buffalo. It just wasn't the right fit, it seemed, for him. And he was surrounded by a lot of really good talent in San Francisco on that defense. He still is, by the way. But he's probably the most polarizing guy.
Well, I will say this, too. On top of his draft position, mm-hmm. a lot of Bills fans might be negative on him, you know, think negatively about him, because he hasn't been too nice to Bills fans
since he
left. He actually said some pretty nasty things via Twitter last season. So
yes,
that might still sting a little bit too, I think.
Yeah, and we take that very seriously. I know I do. I don't enjoy. I personally had a little bit of a spar with Dante on Twitter before the Bills had released him and let him, you know, become a free agent. I had a little back and forth with him because he said something on his Twitter feed about the Bills draft and kind of like made fun of it or something. And I said, you know, why would you do that? It just doesn't make sense. And I think he had a tendency to do that. And a lot of people thought he was a really good guy in the locker room. And he's a guy that the team, you know, could use, you know, but right now, what do you got? You replace him. You got Jairus Byrd. You had Jairus Byrd back there playing safety. He was a young guy when Dante left, but Jairus is one of the top safeties in the league. Who'd you rather have right now? Jairus Byrd or Dante Whitner? I think I'd rather have Jairus Byrd, to be honest with you. So, you know, maybe you think of it that way. So we'll see. I mean, it's really interesting how all of this plays out. Now, remember, there were some guys that have left this year, but I'm not giving you the option to pick them. But Ryan Fitzpatrick, Andy Levitre, George Wilson, Nick Barnett, and, of course, the receivers, Donald Jones and David Nelson. Speaking of former Bills, though, Chris Draft, linebacker, played with the Bills a few years ago. He's going to join me next on the John Murphy Show, and he's going to talk about him speaking at the Rookie Symposium recently and going to Afghanistan to talk with the troops. And then at 8:30, Brian Piccolo, cousin of Brian Piccolo, the subject of the movie Brian's Song, he's going to join me as well here on Buffalo Bills Radio. It's the John Murphy Show.
And this crowd is on.
time is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
I don't know what we're yelling about.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Family owned and locally operated since 1933. At home, at work, and on the go, NOCO.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. I'm Sal Capaccio, sitting in for Murph tonight. Good to be along with you on a Wednesday night here on Buffalo Bills Radio. Had a tremendous first hour of the program. In case you missed it, head over to iTunes, download the show, as always, download, and please subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also go to the Bills mobile app or buffalobills.com/John Murphy Show to hear anything that you missed. We talked with Mike D'Amico, who is a defense attorney in Buffalo, and we talked, of course, about the Aaron Hernandez case with Mike. Joining me on the line right now, though, is a guy who, ironically, had a message for some rookies this year, considering everything we've seen happen throughout the National Football League this offseason, especially the Aaron Hernandez case and some of these guys and the trouble that they get in the National Football League. They need to be kind of steered a little bit and told some of the pitfalls to watch out for. And they do that at the Rookie Symposium every year when they come into the league. And a guy who was able to talk to some of these rookies this year who played for the Buffalo Bills, a former sixth-round pick in the 1998 draft out of Stanford. He played with the Bears and some other teams before coming to the Bills in 2009. A guy with 150 games under his belt in the National Football League. He's Chris Draft. Chris, thanks for joining me on the John Murphy Show tonight.
Man, it's my pleasure. My pleasure.
Chris, tell us a little bit about you going to the Rookie Symposium and speaking. How did that all come together for you?
Well, this is actually my eighth Rookie Symposium.
So wow.
I had my initial one in 1998, but right around 2005-ish, I said, I have some ideas on how we can, you know, do more at engaging our young players, and was able to talk to a couple of folks at the NFL office, and they said, well, come on. Come to the Rookie Symposium.
So what?
Let's talk to them.
What are some of those ideas? What did you bring to the table?
Well, really was that 3 days in terms of Rookie Symposium is not enough. That we have to do more in engaging them from an early, earlier in terms of our directors of player engagement right now. So we have to spend more time with them at the facilities, not as much at the Rookie Symposium. And then the real change in terms of Rookie Symposium was, what can you do? Not just what not to do, but what are the real opportunities? How can you set yourself up? So instead of just looking at, you know, some of the pitfalls, but really saying, you know, what is the opportunity? So where do I see myself in 5 years, in 10 years, and really taking advantage of this game?
Chris, what is the number one reason you believe athletes, NFL players, go astray once they become professional football players, guys who get in trouble? Is it because they surround themselves with the wrong people? Is it because they just have too much time on their hands and they don't know how to handle the money that goes along with that? What's the number one reason you've found?
Well, I think the most important thing is to realize this, that the guys that get in trouble are a very small amount of the guys that are playing. So the ones that do get in trouble, I mean, it really comes down to potentially friends that are around, certain things with their family, putting demands on them that are just crazy, certain things in terms of the ladies that are around, females, and then just really finances and understanding that. So I think the biggest problem is it's really not knowing exactly what they're getting themselves into, and that's why the Rookie Symposium is so important.
A couple of years ago, Herm Edwards had a tremendous speech at the Rookie Symposium. Made a lot of people laugh, but he spoke a lot of truths, obviously. And one of the things he brought up was social media. Chris, how much has social media changed the way that athletes can enhance their brand as well as be careful about their brand?
Absolutely. Completely changed it. Completely changed it. You know, you have an opinion. You want to comment on something. I mean, you can say it from anywhere. And it's completely changed, the connection that an athlete can have with the fans. But also, when you don't realize that fans are watching what you're doing, it can completely change your relationship, too. So it makes it where you have to be more aware of what you're saying. And any little slip-up, instead of it now being a little discussion in the corner, now is out in the public for everyone to see.
Talking with Chris Draft, former linebacker for the Buffalo Bills. He played in Buffalo in 2009 here with the Bills. He played 11 games, started three of them at linebacker. What do you remember from your time here in Buffalo?
The people. I was talking to E.J. Manuel and the rest of the Bills rookies before they left out at the Play 60 camp, and I was telling them how great the Bills fans were, how amazing they were. And in 2009, we played the Indianapolis Colts, the last game of the season, and it was a blizzard. I mean, it's snow. It's crazy. And they were waiting for me to say, man, there were some real diehard, dedicated fans that showed up and were there. And I was like, no. The place was sold out. People were excited. They know how to dress. They are ready to go. And it was just amazing.
Why was it important for you to stay involved in the game after you left the game?
Well, this has always been a goal of mine in terms of empowering our young men. And when I look at the game of football, we have so much power to affect people's lives outside of this game. And so, you know, being able to help guys see not just the pitfalls, but really what the opportunities are. Delanie Walker spoke. He's now a Tennessee Titan, was with the San Francisco 49ers, and he shared about his uncle, an aunt that passed away 5 hours after their team party after the Super Bowl. And now he's partnering with MAD and, you know, Mothers Against Drunk Driving and completely changing awareness about drunk driving because of it. So, I mean, there's so much opportunity in terms of what you can do with this platform. And our hope is that you really, you know, that you understand that and don't just throw it away.
Where do you reside now, Chris? Do you visit Buffalo often, and where do you make your home?
I reside in Atlanta, but I am not there so much. But I've had a chance to get back to Buffalo a couple of times. I was up visiting with, you know, Roswell Park a couple of times. Got a chance to go back to the Thursday night game last year when the Bills prevailed over the Miami Dolphins. And hopefully I'll be able to get back up there a couple of times during the season.
Well, you got a couple other things planned before you get the chance to do that, and some really cool things going on, and good for you. You're going to be going to Afghanistan very soon. When are you doing that, and tell us why?
I'm actually going on June 30th. So basically I'm going from the Rookie Symposium, have a couple-day break, and then jumping on a plane to go to Afghanistan. Just absolutely amazing. It's an NFL USO trip, and usually I'm in Atlanta, and, you know, at the fireworks downtown, and I'm kind of watching them, and they said I had an opportunity to go visit the troops, and I was like, oh my goodness, yes, count me in. I want to go. I want to be there. You know, my father was in the Marine Corps, and basically those values were instilled in me from an early age. My grandfather was career Army, which absolutely instilled that in my mom. My brother was in the Navy, where, you know, routinely they were cruising through the Persian Gulf. So to have an opportunity to spend the 4th of July, because we'll be there for a week, spend the 4th of July with the troops. I mean, I don't think there's not too many words that can really say how exciting it is and how honored I am to be able to represent the NFL, represent the Buffalo Bills even out in Afghanistan.
What's your message going to be for the troops when you're out there?
I mean, it really is that we support you, man. We got your back. You know, we appreciate everything that you're doing. I mean, when you're putting your lives on the line, I mean, that's, we appreciate you. You know, we understand that you're here, you know, that you're out there fighting, and every day that it's you have to be on.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to play this. You wouldn't be able to play this game without those men and women doing what they're doing for us.
No way. I mean, this game or anything, just, you know, the ability to get up and be free and to have choices and thoughts, you know, all the things that we're talking about here, the possibility of change is because of this great country.
Chris Draft joining me right now. Chris, before I let you go, I see you're a Stanford guy, and of course the Cardinal. They've had a couple of good seasons here. Now they're playing pretty well over there now in the Pac-12. David Shaw doing a tremendous job as coach. You follow your Cardinal still?
Absolutely following the Cardinal. I still can't get my hands around, arms around, mind around the Pac-12. I'm a Pac-10 guy, so I'm still trying to accept that, but. The Cardinals have been doing amazing, and really they've sent a message to the country. They sent a message very loud and very clear that You do not have to compromise academics to have a solid and elite football team.
I know you'll feel me on this then when I say, look, I'm a Syracuse guy. We're going for the Big East of the ACC. I don't know what to feel about this anymore, this stuff, Chris. It's crazy, you know? I mean, I got to start figuring out other teams now and rooting against different teams I've never thought about rooting for. This whole college football thing, this landscape is changing overall. It's all about the dollar, you know?
It so much is about the dollar. People are moving. They're doing the same thing with high schools, how they're trying to match things up. Eventually, it should shake itself out, but... you know, right now, you know, there's a little bit of movement, which creates opportunity to be able to play against different teams and, yeah, and get a different feel. But it's still college football, and it's still amazing.
Hey, real quickly, what did you think? What was your impressions of the Bills rookies? E.J. Manuel, Kiko Alonso, Robert Woods, those guys?
Well, I'll tell you this. When I saw E.J., I said, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Are you really that big? Are you really that big? Now, I didn't exactly say that. I was thinking that in my mind, and I was hoping that he could see that in my eyes and in my face, like, oh, my goodness.
Chris, I said the same thing myself. I said the same thing myself. When he was introduced to the media here and he stood at the podium, I was taken aback by his presence of how big he was, and his personality is even bigger than that, really, because of his demeanor.
He did an amazing job. And really, when you see quarterbacks, they have an aura about them.
Yes.
That's what you want. Is you want them to lead, and it's just natural. Last year I had an opportunity to see, Russell Wilson. When he walked around, you just knew that he had the respect of all those rookies. He had them where he could have told them to run some routes inside the ballroom, and they would have been running routes. And, you know, that's the kind of feel that I had for EJ, man. You could see the respect already of the other rookies. They're ready for him to lead. Now, he knows that you have to earn it, and you have to do it with your actions, but he's already built a relationship with him, and you can see it.
Chris, I know what you're doing is a great thing. Really appreciate you talking with the rookies and helping them out. But, of course, going over to Afghanistan and supporting the troops over there, that's great for everybody, not even if you're just an NFL fan, but for everybody involved. Thank you so much for coming on. I hope you get to Buffalo and we can meet up and we can talk again soon. Okay, buddy?
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
All right. That is Chris Draft, former linebacker for the Buffalo Bills. 150 games he played in the National Football League. Did you think of that about Chris Draft? Probably not, but he did. He played at Stanford, came into the league in 1998. He was a sixth-round pick, 157th overall by the Chicago Bears. Started off in Chicago, went to San Francisco in 99, then went to Atlanta, played there from 2000 through 2004, a couple of years in Carolina, a couple of years in St. Louis, and then played in Buffalo. 89 starts overall. 16 sacks in his career. He's a guy that contributed on special teams and did some things, but one of those names you don't really think of a lot because he only played one season in Buffalo, Russ, but he's had that's a nice career for a guy. That's a nice career right there.
Well, I think it says a lot, too. I mean, that guy, you can tell, like I saw him on the sideline last year for the Thursday night game, and you see him come back every now and then to be involved with the community, and he was here a year. You know, and
yep.
I mean, it really says a lot about what Buffalo meant to him and what he felt and thought of the people around here in the community and this team. You know, it makes you feel pretty good.
Absolutely.
I loved what he had to say about EJ. That was awesome.
Oh, yeah. And I agree 100%. I'm going to tell you this. The day the Bills drafted him, of course, we were down here. We were doing a draft show, myself, Joe Biscaglia. And then the next day the Bills brought him in. He met the media. I went out into the Bills media room. And the first thing I noticed was, my goodness, like he's a big dude. Like he towers. You don't realize how big he is until you stand next to him. Now you put shoulder pads and helmet on him, he's even bigger. And then it's not just how big he is, but then all of a sudden he's got just that stoic demeanor. Not mean, he has a great smile, but he's always, it seems like he's right there. You know, he never gives you anything more than that nice smile and that nice demeanor, very nice young man. And you're like, okay, this guy's business. And when you put all that together, you're like, okay, that's impressive. It's just impressive on the surface.
He's a professional and a leader.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the coolest things I heard, Chris Brown, who obviously does a great job, he had talked to Zebre Sanders a lot about EJ. And the one thing Zebre said was, if EJ says it, we believed it at Florida State. And it was like,
and
okay,
I believe it was Zebre, or was it Nigel? Zebre, who was his roommate for 3 years, right?
Correct, yes.
Zebre was his roommate for 3 years at Florida State, so obviously they know. And, of course, yet six Florida State guys now on the Buffalo Bills roster, right. So which is crazy. You got Zebry and Nigel and EJ, and then you got the three guys on the special teams, the battery of special teams, the punter, Powell, the kicker, Potter, and the long snapper, Garrison Sanborn. All
you mean Hopkins.
Hopkins, I'm sorry. Yeah. Hopkins, yes, I apologize. But so there you go. There's so many of them, I can't keep them straight, Russ. That's what it is. And the long snapper, Garrison Sanborn, also a Florida State guy. Hey, we're taking your phone calls on the question tonight. If you could have one Buffalo Bill back on the roster, who was a player who's now playing on another team, who would it be? You can't count anybody who just left this year, though. There's plenty of guys you can choose from. We've gone through lists. We've had Antoine Winfield, Jabari Greer, and Dante Whitner as possibilities. Paul Pazluzzi, we had a Taquio Spikes, a London Fletcher. Who would it be? Give us a call. 803-0550 or 888-550-2550 here on the John Murphy Show. I'm Sal Capaccio. Hit me on Twitter if you want, at Sal Sports. If you can't get to a phone, I'll take a look at that, and I'll read some of those on the air. Got an interesting story in the NFL that came down. This is kind of, I don't know. I think it's cool. I guess it's weird. Maybe we'll see this a little bit more. But how about this? The Jacksonville Jaguars, they drafted or signed Denard Robinson. And Denard Robinson, of course, the former Michigan quarterback who was a tremendous player at Michigan. But a lot of people believe he doesn't have a real position in the National Football League. Is he a quarterback? Is he a running back? Is he a wide receiver? Well, it appears the Jacksonville Jaguars, folks, have made up a position for Denard Robinson. On their official roster, Denard Robinson is listed as his position, not QB, not RB, not WR, but on the Jaguars' official roster, Denard Robinson is listed as OW. Offensive weapon. Offensive weapon is the new position given to Denard Robinson, and that is the moniker that the Jaguars have on him as on their official roster. Pete in Depew. Let's bring him up. Pete in Depew, you're on the John Murphy Show. What's going on, Pete?
First of all, I love that, actually, OW. Anyway.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's listed as that on the roster. So, go check it out.
You throw me off track here. What was the...
Who's the one Bill you want back?
Oh, I used to have arguments with my brother about... this guy that I thought was really, really good, I think he put Jabari Greer is the guy I'm talking about.
And that's the guy I choose as well.
And he, I don't know, he always seemed to be around the ball, but like McKelvin's always around the ball, but he doesn't make the play. Greer always seemed to make the play when he was around the ball.
I agree. I think Jabari was, Jabari came in, by the way, as an undrafted free agent, I believe, out of Tennessee.
I know.
And he had a nice little career in Buffalo, and then, he moved on. He's been very successful in New Orleans since then. He has a Super Bowl ring, and Jabari Greer would be that guy for me. Thank you very much for the phone call, Pete. We appreciate that. Zach in Hamburg, you're on the John Murphy Show. What's going on, Zach?
Hey, so two guys that come to my mind, I don't know, I think they were said, but is Pat Williams and Antoine Winfield. And the biggest reason is because, Pat Williams, I feel like he had his best years after he left us. He played for us really well, but I think he had his best years after. And same thing for Antoine Winfield. I think he was just kind of booted a little prematurely. And he's a guy that position, I mean, was just, like, filtered through over and over and over, even all the way up to Gilmore recently. It's just, like, they kind of just keep going through him. And it's like, could you imagine if they would have just constantly stay with that guy, and he would have been like, I don't know, like a stalwart of our dark ages here. Like, it just would have been nice, but now he's known for his Minnesota days, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, though, just so you know, he did actually retire this offseason. Pat Williams.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of Antoine Winfield, but
yes.
Pat Williams finally retired.
But Antoine, I agree. Antoine would have been a nice guy. They both obviously wound up in Minnesota, as you stated, which was pretty interesting. But Pat Williams, on April 23rd, signed a one-day contract so he could retire a Minnesota Viking. That was another guy that you could have chosen, but he is now retired. Okay, we're going to take a timeout here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. I'm Sal Capaccio, and when we come back, we have a very special guest. His name is Brian Piccolo, and you know that name from Chicago Bears fame, and of course, the running back who died of cancer, they made a movie about called Brian's Song. Same name, Brian Piccolo, cousin of that Brian Piccolo, grew up in Western New York, from Western New York. Now he's an MMA fighter, and he's also battling his own form of cancer. We'll talk with him when the John Murphy Show rolls on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And welcome back to the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. My name is Sal Capaccio, filling in for Murph tonight. Glad to be along with you here on a Wednesday night. I'll be here the rest of the weekend into next week as we continue with the offseason and head towards training camp for the Buffalo Bills. And, of course, training camp begins July 28th. 6:10 at night is the very first practice for the Buffalo Bills out at St. John Fisher College. Right now I'm joined on the line by a very special guest. His name is Brian Piccolo, and that name should be familiar with anybody who has really followed football or watched football, football fan throughout the last 30 years or so, because Brian Piccolo, of course, was also the name of a running back for the Chicago Bears who passed away from cancer, who was the subject of a movie entitled Brian's Song. Of course, that was with James Caan and Billy Dee Williams. It was a fantastic movie, and it showed the struggles of Brian Piccolo and his relationships with the Chicago Bears and how his teammates helped him get through that. Well, his cousin, also named Brian Piccolo, grew up in Western New York, and he's a Bills fan, and he went on to become an MMA fighter, and he also has been diagnosed with cancer, and he's currently battling that, and he has an interesting story to share. He has a family, and he's really fighting not only in the ring but out of the ring, and he joins me on the line right now to share that story and talk about it, Brian Piccolo. Brian, thanks a lot. I really appreciate you doing this and talking with Bills fans out there here on the John Murphy Show.
No, thank you, Joe.
Hey, Brian, first of all, where are you located? You live in Florida right now. Is that what it is?
Yes, sir. Panama City, Florida, in the Gulf.
I know.
Gulf of Mexico there.
Yep, I know it well. I lived on the Gulf Coast in Sarasota for close to 16 years. It's a beautiful area, but you grew up here in Western New York. Tell us about your upbringing here in Western New York. Was your family always from here? And where did you go to high school? And then what brought you down to Florida?
Yes, sir. I was born and raised there. I think I moved there from there when I was 22. We grew up in Niagara Falls, New York, through grade school and junior high. And then moved on to Tonawanda, city of Tonawanda there.
And
did some wrestling there, did some football there.
You were on the wrestling team at Tonawanda High School?
Yes, sir.
And what is your relationship to Brian Piccolo, the subject of the movie, Brian's Song? I mean, I said he's, your cousin, but how does that dynamic work as far as the family relationship?
Well, Grandma Piccolo told me that's, he's my second cousin. Grandpa, who just died, six, 8 months ago, died of colon cancer. Him and Brian Piccolo's father was brothers. So I guess that makes a second cousin.
There you go. So were you actually named after Brian Piccolo? Do you know that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I was.
Okay. So now take us through your story right now. You're down in Florida, and you're an MMA fighter. How did all of that happen? How did you go from wrestling in high school at Tonawanda High School to becoming an MMA fighter living in Florida?
Oh, it was kind of funny. We, we moved here. You know, I did some construction for a while here, and we went out to a show with a buddy of mine, and he was talking about he had some friends doing mixed martial arts, and I said, hey, man, I always wanted to do that. I'd love to do that. So, and he told me where they were training at, so I went down there and gave it a shot, and I've been loving it ever since, man, giving them hell.
All right, what's MMA fighting like, man? What's it like to get in the ring and do that? I mean, I've always said I'd like to train, but I wouldn't want to get in there and fight with somebody. What's it like doing that?
Well, it's a definite gut check when them cage doors shut. Mm-hmm. You got to have a totally different attitude if you're going to get in there, you know. It's definitely who suffer, you know.
Absolutely.
It's a lot different. It's a lot different sport than you know, wrestling or football or anything like that.
Brian, how old are you right now?
I'm 35.
Okay, you're 35. At what point, what age, when were you first diagnosed with cancer, and when did you first know something may have been wrong and gone to the hospital?
Well, I've always had a problem with acid reflux. About 4 years ago, you know, I was in and out of the doctor's office trying to figure out what was wrong, and they just blowed me off, you know. If the doctors would have done their job back then, you know, I wouldn't be in the situation I'm in. But back in January, you know, I was having trouble swallowing. It just kept getting worse. And eventually, we went to the doctor,
And, you know, they did the biopsy, this and that, and they proved it, seeing there was cancer. And they wanted to keep me in and out of the doctors every day, you know, the hospital every day. So we went down to, I don't know if you ever heard it, it's Moffitt Cancer yes. Center. It's down there in Tampa, Florida. They're like 10th in the world.
Yes.
And we wanted to go get a second opinion. So it was kind of cool that day. We had an appointment there February 8th at noon. Found out, you know, that's when the doctors told me I had 9 months to live, you know, because it done spread my liver, my lymph nodes. And he said, on average, you know, that's with a person in my situation, that's what you usually have. So we got that news at noon. By 2 o'clock, me and my wife, Shelly, we got married by 2 o'clock that day. And by 8 o'clock that day, I was in the cage fighting somebody down there.
Wow, so, that's a heck of a day right there. That's an interesting day. So you were told in February that generally 9 months to live is the prognosis. I mean, that's got to be tough on you. And you have kids as well, right? How old are your kids?
Yeah, I got living with me now. I have, I just got custody of my 9-year-old. And we took his brother in too because it was going to put him in a foster home. You know, the mother, well, we're not getting to that story. But anyways, they were going to take the kid away from her and put him in a foster home. And I was like, no, we got plenty of room, man. Bring the boy on, you know. We'll take him, you know.
Well,
so he's with us now, and then we got my 6-year-old Devin, which Devin is with Shelly, my wife now, and then we got the 3-year-old daughter, which is my wife now.
Well, what I find interesting is that you continued to fight. So what went into the decision for you to continue to fight, not only that night, but as you go on here, why do you stay in the ring? Why is that important for you to do that?
There's a few reasons, you know. One, my youngins, you know, my youngins and any other youngins out there, they see me fighting, and they're going to see me fight till the end. You know, they're going to, until my body says I can't go no more, you know, then I'm going to fight until then. It sends a message out to anybody, you know, you can do whatever you want to do, just go and do it. You know, don't just sit there and talk about it, go and do it. And two, it helps, you know, it helps with my spirits and my attitude and, you know, just keeping such a positive attitude, knowing that, you know, the end could be here soon. And it helps with my attitude, and when I get in there and work out, I feel good. When I'm done, I feel good, you know?
Yeah, does it help you keep your mind off things?
Yeah, it helps me keep my mind. And look where it's got me. I wouldn't be on the radio with you if I hadn't done it.
<That's>
you
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, it's just there's just so many more options. And then it's something that me and my youngins do together. You know, I take them into they do grappling, not mixed martial arts at that young age, but they get in there and do submission grappling matches, like – it's like wrestling with submissions. And, you know, how many guys can say they're sitting there fighting on the same card as their son, you know?
Absolutely. So you're okay with your kids doing this, right?
It's a sport. You know, if you treat it like a sport and it's discipline, they learn so much discipline and you know, they're tough. It's just, you know, so many more options for them, you know, it's a sport.
Brian,
I was okay with it.
I was watching a story online that one of the local news channels did on you regarding this issue as well, and I saw a picture they showed. Somebody was wearing a Stevie Johnson jersey. You're a Bills fan, aren't you?
Yes, sir. I'm a Bills fan till the end. Not too many people around here like the Bills, so I get picked on a lot, you know. But you gotta stick with the team. You know, you can't go against your team.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, Brian, we're talking with Brian Piccolo, by the way. He's the cousin of former Bears running back Brian Piccolo, who is the subject of the movie Brian's Song. Brian has been diagnosed with cancer. He's an MMA fighter. He continues to fight, says it's, you know, something that really is a strength that he shows with his kids to show that he's fighting to the end and something that he loves and shows that no matter what your situation is, you can still do something that you love and be an inspiration to others. Brian, I got to ask you, you know, going forward here, there's a lot of people here in Buffalo who have, you know, a lot of tremendous support for you. I know you're coming up to Buffalo. There's going to be a benefit for you. How did that all come about for you?
Well, I'm surrounded by a lot of good people. I've been blessed. You know, I got my family that lives up there. You know, all my family's from New York there. And then I got a lot of close friends up there that are helping with the benefit. You know, what they're trying to do is help me raise money to finish my house and help prepare for the worst, you know. My thing is I'm going to be here for another 10, 15, 20 years and watch my babies graduate. But
awesome.
I didn't prepare for anything like this. You know, not many people would think something like this, you know. But I didn't prepare. So right now I got a house halfway built and a wife that would never be able to finish it, you know. So if I can't finish this before I leave,
pretty much stout, you know?
Yeah, and I want to bring that up because it's kind of the reason why the benefit is going on, and that is that, yep, you know, a lot of people obviously they have on their list things that they want to do before they leave the earth. You have one thing you want to do, and hopefully you're around for many, many years, but no matter when that is, your one thing you want to do is finish your house. Why is that so important to you, and what's the status on that?
Well, I got to prepare for the worst, like I just said, and I got to do everything in my power to make sure they have a better life after I am gone, like I said, whether it be 10 or 15 years. But I have this house right now. It's up and standing. I got it dried in. You know, the roof's on it, the siding's on it, the doors and windows are in it. I got half the plumbing run. I actually got an electrician coming by Sunday. He got all the wire donated and all the receptacles and the boxes donated. But pretty much everything here I've built myself, you know, with help with the heavy stuff. But, you know, all the way from clearing the land to drawing the plans to pouring the slab to framing it up, you know, that's all me. And, you know, with a little bit of help with some friends. But that's where I sit right now. I got about $40,000 invested, you know, with you know, another $30,000-$40,000, I can get it done, and my wife and my babies would have a place to live with, you know, without a payment or help from some.
Saturday, September 7th, coming up this year, that looks to be the date that this is going to happen. It's going to be at the American Legion in Tonawanda, and of course, you know, people can take part in this. There's a place they can go. There's a Facebook page set up. It's called Benefit for Brian Piccolo. It's P-I-C-C-O-L-O, and I'm sure that anybody's welcome, right? If somebody just wants to share your story, maybe somebody out there has been affected by cancer who wants to, you know, be a part of this as well, or their family members have who is inspired by what you're doing. Maybe they want to be a part of this, right, Brian?
Yeah, more the merrier, you know, and anybody that wants to talk to me that, you know, they're inspired by me, I'd love to talk to them, you know, kind of give them a few pointers on what I do to stay going, you know.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I think it's tremendous what you're doing, and just the fact that you're coming on the radio and you're an open book about your story is tremendous. A lot of people wouldn't be like that, and I understand why you're doing that, and you have a family and you have kids there, and you're trying to do the best you can inside the ring and, of course, outside the ring for them. And I appreciate you coming on the John Murphy Show and sharing your story tonight. Good luck to you, Brian, and come up here in Buffalo in September and stop by the John Murphy Show. Come to a Bills game September 8th. They're playing the Patriots at home, man. Hope to see you there.
Hey, that sounds like a plan, Sal. I sure appreciate everything, brother.
Okay, no problem. Thank you very much. Brian Piccolo, thanks a lot for joining us on the John Murphy Show. We'll take a timeout here on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Sal Capaccio sitting in for Murph tonight. Oh, man, that was something else right there. If you missed the interview we just had with Brian Piccolo, you know, you talk with guys like that, like Brian Piccolo. That's a great example right there, the interview we just did with him of, you know, here I am on the other end, and I'm, you know, torn up inside talking with the guy and almost moved to tears. And he's a bundle of joy over there talking about his life and his kids and MMA fighting and all that and keeping that positive spirit. You just got to admire that kind of thing coming from a guy like that. It's pretty incredible.
Well, I would think when you're in that position, I mean, what else can you do? But, you know, just have a positive outcome.
That's right.
You know,
especially when you have kids and want them to, you know, to you
absolutely
know, see the bright side of things and the positivity of things that are going on. And, you know, being a Bills fan, he's going to be up here the weekend of the opener, so, you know.
Puts life in perspective.
That's right, absolutely does. Maybe we can make it work for him, see him at the opener. Hope he gets a chance to enjoy his Buffalo Bills taking on the New England Patriots, who will be without Aaron Hernandez, because who knows at that time where this is going to lead. If we had earlier on tonight, Mike D'Amico, a defense attorney in Buffalo, talking about the Aaron Hernandez case. If you missed that, make sure you check it out on iTunes. All of the podcasts, all of the shows are podcasted on iTunes. Head on over there, subscribe to the program. Also, you can go to buffalobills.com/John Murphy Show. So make sure you check all of that out. Mike D'Amico really broke it down very well as far as what's going to happen next with Aaron Hernandez and the legal situation. There's going to be a time where we're going to really talk more about how this affects the football team for the New England Patriots. I think right now, though, because, you know, you're still before camp and there's a lot to be sorted out. You know, the Bills have their own issues to deal with before they get to that point. They got to figure out who the starting quarterback is and things like that. But once week one comes around, I'll tell you, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Patriots and all those receivers that have left and the ones that they have. The one thing I will say, stop it with the Tim Tebow is going to play tight end thing, okay? Maybe he'll play here and there at tight end if he even makes the team. I'm not convinced the guy's even going to make the team, to be quite honest with you, at this point. But if he even makes the team, he might play tight end here or there. But he's not lining up starting at tight end week one against the Bills blocking Mario Williams. That's not happening, okay? And Bill Belichick is a little bit smarter than that. He's not going to put him and his team in that situation. But it's going to be really interesting to see what they do on the field. But, of course, we're all going to be paying attention to the legal aspect of what happens from here on out with Aaron Hernandez. Had a question we threw out there for you tonight. What former Buffalo Bill who's currently playing in the National Football League, an active guy on a different team's roster, basically, would you like to have back in Buffalo if you could have any of those players back? There's been so many of them that have done a really good job since leaving Buffalo, but, you know, maybe just wasn't the fit in Buffalo. Who knows what the reason is? Maybe they went somewhere else and they just blossomed there or whatever. The circumstances are always different for everybody who leaves the Bills. The guy I always say, I've been saying all night, Jabari Greer. Got a few Jabari Greer votes also coming my way on Twitter. A couple people called and said that. Got some Antoine Winfields. Got a couple of London Fletchers, Takeo Spikes. We had a call come in during the break, and the caller wasn't able to get on the air, but he wanted to remind us, of a player, and that is Justin Bannon. That's an interesting one right there, Russ.
It's a very interesting one, and honestly, a name I didn't think of.
Right.
But he had some great years with the Ravens and a guy who, you know, as we said, he's one of those guys that, you know, was okay here. You know, he wasn't one of those guys when he left where you're like, wow, that's a huge loss for the team.
Forgot about
Sorry
him.
Sorry to
right?
let him go. But he really blossomed after he left here.
I don't know if I'd want him back now with the defensive line the Bills have, considering that he's 33, going to be 34 years old, and the Bills have, you know, Marcell Dareus and Kyle Williams and Mario Williams and a defensive line right now that I think really is one of the better, more talented lines in the league, at least on paper. But the concept of a guy like Justin Bannon would help, definitely.
Absolutely.
He's a guy.
I mean, you know, realistically, I don't want any of these guys back because
sure.
I like our roster better with the youth and, you know, with the versatility. But for the, you know, for the fun of it, yeah, a guy like Justin Bannon, that's really interesting. He still might not be number one on my list, but he just shot like that. Whoever called, that's a great suggestion. He shot up pretty high on my list now.
Let me ask you this. Emotionally, who's the one guy you think most fans would say? Brian Moorman? For emotion, only pure emotion reasons, not football reasons, who'd be the one guy? Let me ask it this way. If one of these guys could just sign a one-day contract to retire a Bill because he was coming to the end, who would most want to be? Would it be Mormon?
Takeo
would
Spice.
Have to be. It could be Takeo. See,
I think
it would be Mormon,
Spice.
Though.
I don't know. I mean, maybe Mormon. I mean, he's probably, I guess there's a debate to be had, but I think it's pretty clear that he's the best punter in Bill's history. I mean, he made the All-50 team, for crying out loud. He's the only current player that made that team.
You could argue he's been the best actual player in the 13-year playoff drought.
For a lot of those times, he was the leader of the team. But I don't know. Here's why I say Takeo Spikes. I was at when they did that Best Man's Holiday, you know, the movie that was filming here at the Ralph, and, you know, a bunch of Bills fans came out to be extras in that movie. I saw more than any other jersey, I saw Takeo Spikes jerseys. And at game day, too, you still see 51 Takeo Spikes jerseys. People were wearing 51 Takeo Spikes jerseys before he was on the team. I mean, that I remember him saying that. That's what made him want to come here so bad, was that he knew the fans had love for him like that. And I think he would be pretty high on the list. Mormon might be number one, but I think Spikes is a close number two.
Got a lot of thank yous to head out tonight. Before we head on out of here, to give out, I should say, Mike D'Amico, defense attorney in Buffalo, joining us early on in the program to talk about the Aaron Hernandez case. We appreciate that very much. He broke it down very, very well. Make sure you check that out on iTunes or at buffalobills.com/John Murphy Show. Chris Draff, Bills linebacker, played with the Bills back in 2009. He was at the rookie symposiums, going out to Afghanistan, talk with the troops. We talked with him earlier tonight, and we talked a little while ago with Brian Piccolo, who is a Bills fan from Western New York. He's an MMA fighter. He's battling cancer right now. Had an interesting story to share, and he has a benefit coming up in September here in Western New York. Thank you very much to our producer, Russ Burton. Updates, Pete Kargis, Jeff Matthews, a Bills director of broadcasting, Mark Honan, VP of broadcasting, of course, John Murphy. Always got to thank my man Murph for allowing me to sit in tonight. And I plan on being back here tomorrow. See, can't get rid of me that easily, folks. John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio. I'm Sal Capaccio. Thanks a lot.